So tonight, we'll do a little exploration of the fifth step. So as soon as we admitted that we were powerless over our addiction, whatever it was, we were taking a step in facing reality. That's a big step. Many people don't take it, even if they don't have a kind of addiction that we're talking about. And then we get to step four. How many people here, if I may ask, have done step four? Okay, so a lot of us here know what that was like. We reflected and we contemplated about our lives, and I'm particularly saying we, because it's not just one. I mean, this whole program, which is so wonderful, it's the we. And this is so much what the Buddha also talked about, the interconnection of all our energies and all our activities, thoughts, words, and deeds. It's not enough to keep it to ourselves, actually, if we really want to grow. And we can make this list and go, whoa, I just did something really huge here. I explored. But it has to go further than that. And then we move into step five. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. And then the pieces of the puzzle become even more clear. This admitting to ourselves, saying it out loud, and admitting to ourselves is very powerful. I don't know what your experience has been. I can write it down and keep it like this. But when I go public, it becomes, again, much more real. So this is what step five says, and you all know it, or many of you know it. When it comes to ego deflation, few steps are harder to take than five. But scarcely any step is more necessary to long-time sobriety and peace of mind than this one. When we speak with another person, we show our vulnerability, and we're letting go of our strong attachment to our uniqueness, our seeing ourselves as the center of the universe. And what I find so compelling about that, it's almost as if the Buddha said it. Almost as if he said it, because it echoes a main foundation of the Buddha's teachings, this letting go of the attachment to I, me, mine, letting go of the attachment to I have to have, I'm the most important, letting go of our attachment to our views and opinions. You can see what happens with attachment to views and opinions if you just wake up and read the paper for 1 minute. Right? But it's letting go of this enchantment with the solidity of self. We actually get hypnotized by our wondrousness, even if we hate ourselves. There's an attachment to that. You know? Who will I be if I let go of self-hate? You know. By the way, I've had people actually say that in therapy sessions. If I let go of the anger, who will I be? If I let go of the depression, who will I be? If I don't hate myself, what am I? And that's what these steps are about, to let us get closer and closer to this something that is our essence. So as we do step five, and if we do step five, we start to gain a more clear recognition of what are the unskillful works and actions and thoughts that have been running our life. And I don't like the word bad. And the Buddha doesn't use bad and good. He uses wholesome and unwholesome, skillful and unskillful. And I think in our society, that's particularly important when there are so many issues around self-esteem and I'm bad or I'm good or I'm better than you. No, what's working? What doesn't work? When we have that kind of a curiosity, it becomes easier to look. It becomes easier to look. And again, we start to see this interconnectedness. Oh, when I do this, that's what happens, which is very different. So So all of the Buddha's teachings are geared to living in a life aligned with reality, not the way we want things to be, but the way things are. And that sounds so realistic, doesn't it? Be with things as they are. But I would almost guarantee that everyone here in the room, or almost everybody here in the room, has worked at maneuvering around things as they are to sort of get to things the way we want them to be, and it doesn't work out that well, does it? Or, I mean, if anybody disagrees with me, I will worship at your feet, actually. This is why meditation is really important. The aspect of meditation, I know in step 11, they get more into that, because when we sit quietly and be with what is, like during the meditation, it was interesting, sounds come, we either don't like them or we can be with them, but we can't make them go away. And how many times we try to make things go away that they don't want to go away? What are we going to do? But we start to see when we're quiet. We see how we want to hold on. We see how we push away. And we get more and more of this willingness to see, oh, this is a mind-body process. It's not just I'm good or bad. And this is really important. And so we study the Dharma. We do the meditating. We follow in the Buddha's footsteps, so to speak. And in the same way, we do it with Bill W. He's an awesome, awesome person. We, I would imagine, most of us here, have found a way to be free from some form of a devastating addiction. Whatever my addictions were, and still have a little bit here with food, I have to confess. But whatever my addictions were, if I had let them play themselves out, I would not be here today, that's for sure. They don't just go away, even though we would say, oh, well, I can do a little bit here. I can do a little bit there. So we have this delusion that clouds our mind and puts a distortion between us and reality. And so when we have stopped whatever this particular addiction is, things get more clear. We don't always want to see it, right? But things get more clear. Now, one of the things in doing steps 4 and 5, I think, and the Buddha talks so much about it, is to understand the cause and effects of our actions. I mean, a lot of times we can see, gee, I wasn't very nice. But we don't really always know what was the effect of this not being nice on another person. When we stop and think that our energy can change a room, and there's a wonderful... Well, there was something when the people were trying to get out of Vietnam and they're in the boats, a lot of people were panicked. But if one person was in the boat, calm, somehow little by little that calmed things down. So even our energy is important and has an effect. But in order to see cause and effect, well, one, we certainly have to be mindful. We have to be aware. We have to be willing to look. We have to be willing to look beyond ourselves. How many times when I was drinking and before, when I would apologize to my mother, I knew she was annoyed at me because I knew I had done something, and I'd say, I'm sorry, Mom, I'm sorry. But I didn't really know what I was being sorry for. I wanted her to not be annoyed at me. Not what was my behavior like, what was the impact on her. I mentioned my mother, but I could mention everybody else who was in my life. Cause and effect. Maybe some of you have seen this. I'll just be really quickly. If you ever go in a store and somebody in front of you is giving the salesperson a really hard time. Now, we're allowed to disagree with salespeople. But, this is ridiculous. How can you treat me this way? Oh my gosh, this is being recorded, right? Okay. Okay. Why are you doing this to me? I'm going to report you to the manager. On and on and on. And then that person leaves in a huff. Then I come up to speak to the salesperson. I am going to get the effect of the person before me. Have you had that kind of thing one way or another? Yeah, I mean, if you have a car, you're driving in traffic, and I mean, there's so many ways. And when we start to look at cause and effect, it actually becomes interesting. And we start to realize, wow, I'm affecting more than me. And it can be scary how our untrained minds can be blindside us just from seeing this. That's part of why we do meditation, part of why we do contemplation, and part of why a lot of us speak to a sponsor who can say, hey, wait a minute, that wasn't such a great thing you did. But I like you anyway, you know, that kind of thing. So we share experiences so that they become more real. I was talking to a client today, and as she put out some of what was going on, she heard herself, and she said, no, that's not really true. But and this happens a lot. It happens with me. We get caught in our minds, so we don't really even know what we're thinking. It goes round and round and round. So as we move into step five, admit it to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our unskillful behaviors, we hear, we learn, and we articulate certain behaviors and patterns. We start to actually learn about them. And then we can better see how they work in action and how they've harmed others and how they harm ourselves. And then we can take responsibility. So it's not just a list and reading it. It's much deeper than that. It's a real beautiful three-dimensional process here. And the Buddha taught over and over and over again this whole thing of cause and effect, in many ways, some on the surface and some much deeper than that. So step 4 through 7 help us widen our perspectives. Now it's interesting, step 5 in some way resembles a confession, but it's not like going into a room with a door between you and the confessor, you know, the confessee, whatever, whoever's taking it. And it's not just saying, I have sinned or I made a mistake or I'm bad. But it's interesting. I didn't know this until a few years ago. In some Buddhist monasteries, they have a meeting where all the monastics who live in the monastery get together. And it's a time when monastics make confession. And what they confess to the group is how they may have broken the precepts. So one might say, I got angry and raised my voice to somebody. That's all. No, and they don't go for it. Or I ate after when I wasn't supposed to eat. But they make this kind of a confession. The group hears it, and nobody is going, bad boy, you know, a bad girl. But they say it to the group. They let the group know. That helps keep us watching a little more, because if we then don't confess, then we're also lying. So it's kind of an interesting, as a kind of an accountability. And obviously it doesn't automatically bring anything like quote-unquote absolution. But it's a reminder, and this is what's so wonderful, it's a reminder of where we wish to make some changes. And it helps us hold the intention to help us be on a new path. And this word intention is so important in Buddhism, the Buddhist teachings. I don't say Buddhism. I don't like the ism piece. In many things, it says something like, everything rests on the tip of intention. If my intention is to be kind and somehow I hurt somebody's feelings, but I was still kind, I don't have control over the other person's sensitivity unless I know that person very well. So this helps us look more at our intentions. Now, it's interesting when you look at different languages, because there can be a translation, but the words can actually have different meanings. So the principal characteristic of confession is reflected in the literal meaning in the Tibetan equivalent, which is what is Rishakpa. It means splitting open. I like that. Splitting open, laying bare. And laying bare is like declaring. So we say, you know, we'll admit that's one thing, and it's a good word, but there's something about laying bare. It's got a little more vulnerability, and then you're like splitting open. Interesting. Opening up and honesty in every situation is the essence of the Buddhist path. And I think this is where Bill W. was going as well. And he struggled with all this because it's not easy, but it's important. And with step five, if we really give ourselves to it, we deepen our investigation, we deepen our sense of responsibility, and we open to some accountability. Very important. It's not sufficient to just recite, I did this or I did that. No, that doesn't do it. We have to look for the underpinnings. So, 25 years ago, something like that, I only remember it because it was quite remarkable. A woman asked if she could do the fifth step with me. And 25, 30 years ago, and I was nervous because it felt like a big responsibility, and we made the arrangement she could come. And she came in, she said she was nervous. She sat down, I asked if she wanted water. Oh, please, oh, please. And takes out her pocketbook, and she takes out a piece of paper that's no bigger than this, okay? And I said, okay, you know, we're here together. I just want to be here and hear you. And she says, okay, I'm going to do it now. I get angry, and sometimes I'm mean, and sometimes I take stuff that's not mine. Ah, whoa, that was hard. And I have to honor that maybe it was hard. But I think I may have said something like, yeah, I guess that was hard. Well, would you like to do a fifth step? And she was a little taken aback and got annoyed. And we talked about it. And I mean, she didn't come to me for therapy. I was there as a fifth step person. And she left, and she never did another fifth step with me. But nothing changes from that. And I did tell her, I think it was really strong of her to make this first attempt. But that's not it. And so I could both honor her and also say that's not it, you know. But so now the word's exact nature. That's really important. We want to get a better sense of our motivations. Our motivations, our inclinations, our habitual tendencies. What are the triggers? What are the causes and conditions that lead us to act in a certain way? So we want to explore all that. And then there's a piece in here. I know this step is about the exact nature of our wrongs, but I kind of like to add part B, take a look at the causes and conditions that lead us to be happy and helpful and kind. I think that's an important part also, because it's, especially in our society, we don't spend enough time really looking at what is the whole mandala of kindness and happiness? And so I personally would add that in. Okay. So we ask things like, why? Not why, like what's wrong with me, why, but looking into, why did we act or speak in a certain way to a certain person? I imagine we all have some people that, oh, God, we just go with the flow. You know, we're just so easy. We're just so lovely. And other people, I don't know, they trigger something. So what is it about the trigger? Where'd that come from? How can I work with it? See, this is more than a list, yeah? Or what were the underlying feelings? What was the situation? I mean, some people may be really patient when they go home and they're with their family and the kids do things upsetting, but you're really kind and loving. And maybe you get on the highway and maybe a different person takes over. You know? What are the different feelings? I mean, I know there are a lot of people at work, I mean, just from when I used to be in an office, who are so timid and will do anything and take care of everything. And then I find out later that when they go home, they're tyrants. So we want to see, we want to explore this. The other piece I think is really important. What were we trying to accomplish? I mean, was it a knee-jerk reaction? Or what were we trying to accomplish? What were we trying to hide? You see, when you really look at it, there's so much here. There's so much here. So with this investigation, obviously we arrive at a much deeper understanding of our actions. And so we can then know how to move into some kind of healing. As we look more closely at our actions, I suspect that we often see our unskillful actions, okay? I suspect we often see there's some form of fear, some place that we want to protect, or some lack of trust that our needs will be met. You know, we're looking out for ourselves. And so much of this is learned very, very early on in childhood as we try to maneuver our way in a complex family situation. Not all. But if we do this, we can come to forgive ourselves. Oh, I was scared. That's what was happening. How can I help myself so that I don't have so much fear? So we see this with a kind of a kindness, which is what helps the healing. And when we can understand what leads us in certain directions, we can then also feel compassion arise. And this is one of the wings of the Buddha's teaching. He said wisdom is really important, seeing things as they are. But the other wing is compassion. And if you look here at the two Buddha statues, we could say, and by the way, compassion and wisdom are very interrelated and integrated, but we could say that the Buddha over there represents wisdom, and Prajnaparamita, the female, represents compassion. And I love having both of them here, don't you? It's just, I love having them both at my back. So as we speak out loud, if we stay connected and not just read for something, we can hear these words in a new way. In a new way. And that means everything. So we do this. We trust our vulnerability in picking somebody to do a fifth step with. You want to also take into account your own vulnerability. So we want to do it with an admirable friend. I mean, be it a sponsor or a program friend, a therapist, a spiritual guide, it doesn't really matter. But somebody that you can trust can hear you. That's so important. There's a beautiful chant that's often done on monastic retreats. It's people bow and they say, by body, speech, or mind, for whatever wrong action I have committed towards the Buddha, the Dhamma, the Sangha, may my acknowledgement of fault be accepted, that in the future there may be restraint. It's quite lovely. I find it very moving. Now, there's another important component in the fifth step, a very important component, And that's right listening. Right listening. The fifth step, to do the fifth step, it requires someone who can do deep listening or compassionate listening. Someone who can hear you without judgment, without having to fix it, and make things better. Someone who can sit like a compassionate mirror and friend. And I love that idea of compassionate mirror. Can you imagine what it would be like? I tried to imagine this a lot, actually. Can you imagine what it would be like to look into a compassionate mirror? Whew. That just really moves me. Take a moment, that. Take a moment. You're not looking to see if you're a day older or how you look, or blah, 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 blah. Looking into the eyes of the beloved. You might try that tonight when you go home. And a good spiritual friend who will help us stay on the path, whom we can discuss our differences quite frankly, and be sure of a compassionate response. And you don't have to be best friends for this. Not at all. This is a very important support that often is lacking. And as we sit in meditation, we are cultivating deep listening to our own arisings and passings away. So I'm almost done. And Ayakima, a wonderful teacher in a book called When the Iron Eagle Flies. A really good friend is like a mountain guide. The spiritual path is like climbing a mountain. We don't really know what we will find at the summit. We've only heard that it's beautiful and that everybody is happy there. The view is magnificent and the air unpolluted. Makes you want to get to the top, right? She goes on to say, if we have a guide who has already climbed the mountain, he, she, can help us avoid falling into a crevice or slipping on loose stones or getting off the path. The one common antidote for all our hindrances is noble friends and noble conversations, which are health food for the mind. Oh, one paragraph, the fifth step, huh? Doing the fifth step is indeed a noble conversation. Well, it's not enough. It's never enough, it seems, right? Except it is enough moment by moment. It's not enough to just acknowledge our errors and our inclination towards unskillful ways. The next steps are vital if we're going to be free. We keep on moving. When we come to a place where we feel we can do without these questionable characteristics, and little by little they start to shed, we become ready and willing to really be without them, and we start moving into steps 6 and 7. And this is very akin to right resolve, which we'll talk about next time. So steps 4 and 5, like the other steps, are about honesty, and they move us closer to change. And I saw a quote by accident one day. It's a quick one. Armistead Maupin, a writer. You know him, yeah? You know him, yeah. Take this one in. The world changes in direct proportion to the number of people willing to be honest about their lives. Can we participate in this changing for the good of the world?
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.